welcome to A Voice of a People, live here with Linda Sims on WGH Talk. How you doing out there? I heard just a few seconds ago, I think winter is here. So, hey, it's not too bad today, though. But, you know, keep bundle up because people are coughing, you know, and sneezing. So you have to be careful out there. But this is A Voice of a People, live with Linda Sims on WGH Talk. I'm live right now on www.wwgh1071.com, and I'm also live right now on that TuneIn app, and you can get that when you download it on any electronic device, and in your search bar, type in WWGH. Also, I'm live in the studio. If you'd just like to be a part of the show, by calling 740-383-9944, and you are welcome to do so. Anytime I am live on the air. Again, that number is 740-383-9944. If it's your first time, I pray it's not your last time. And if you are a faithful listener and supporter of A Voice of a People, I really appreciate your love and your support. Along with you is Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC of 1325 North Main Street here in Marion, Ohio. That number, 740-382-8552. We also have Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson of 582 Lee Street here in Marion, Ohio. That number is 740-223-1515. Or www.logoschristianministries.com. I think their ongoing announcement of free produce is over. I just sent her a text. If it's not, I will announce it before this show is over if it's still going on. But I think it's over in until April of 2026. Continue to keep people up in prayer, you know, that are having health problems, issues, struggles, mental, physical, maybe bereaved families. Please keep one another lifted up in prayer. And Cheryl Lee, she is one of our mass supporters for a long time. Keep her up in prayer as well. Okay. Now, I don't think I have... Oh, don't forget it. They have the drive-through. Hold on. Drive-through. I'll announce that later because I got to dig it out and that take too much time right now. But they're having a drive-through for supplies on Fairground Street, and this is for the homeless shelter. You can just drive through and bring some supplies, toilet paper. I think it was also regular paper that you reams of paper because they use a lot of paper per person, like 80 sheets. Wow. You wouldn't even imagine that,
no,
right?
No, you can't.
Yeah. Mm-mm. They were on the show. 80 sheets, toilet paper, paper towel, stuff like that. Yeah. You know, and you get a coffee and I think a donut as you drive through. Mm-hmm. So
whereabouts is that?
On West Fairground, right?
Oh, okay.
Across.
Oh, okay. Yes,
you know where that is? The
yes,
homeless shelter.
Yes, I know now.
Right
yes,
there.
Right,
yes.
Right.
So if you're out and about and pick up a couple things for the homeless shelter, we have to be helpers one to another in these days, because we never know when it may be us or one of our children or grandchildren that's out there struggling and have nowhere to live. As we can see, people are losing their jobs like crazy. Health support, you know, medical insurance, losing that. Food stamps are losing that. So the rent is so high, they can't afford that. You have two parents working together and still can't make ends meet because they have children to take care of, gas to put in the car, car payments. They may have one or two cars trying to get to work. You know, things are not like they used to be. They're not like they used to be. And we have to be helpers one to another. So that is my announcement right now. And I like to also start my show off with a thought for today. Okay, and that thought is, what is it? Get past your past. Are you still living in the past?
Some people are.
It's time to forget about that and move on if you want to go forward, right? Let the past be the past, both my past and the past of others. There's no need to keep repeating the past in my head. That's right. Just stop it right now. Think. Whatever happened, happened. It's okay for me to move on. Let me be supportive and make it easy, not difficult, for myself and others. When I stay in the present, everything is pleasant. That sounds good. Mm-hmm. Keep the past in the past. Learn from your mistakes and move. Keep it moving. Move forward. Keep it moving. My guest today is Fred Malone. He is the chairman of the Marion County Historical Society. How are you doing today, Fred?
Good. Good as can be, I guess.
Yes.
Keep the past in the past and keep the faith for the future. That's my motto.
Amen. Amen. That sounds good to me. Because you can't go back there and change anything,
you can't.
Can you?
You know, unfortunately, I know a lot of people that are trying to live in the past, and unfortunately, it doesn't do any good for them, and it doesn't do any good for their friends or their family, either one. But sometimes you need to grab a hold of someone like that and just give them a good shake and tell them to start looking toward the future and what can be around the corner. And boy, you are absolutely right when you say that times are bad, because they really are bad. And with the possibility of the loss of Obamacare and what insurance premiums are going to do to people that depend on Obamacare for their health insurance, people that aren't, you know, that don't have a pension plan, that don't have insurance from the place that they work, or they are self-employed and need that. These premiums, people don't realize, are going to double in some cases. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you were paying $500 for insurance a month now on the Obamacare, you may go up to 1,000 or more. And I realize that, you know, it's not a perfect plan by no stretch of the imagination. And President Obama didn't think it was a perfect plan, but it was something that we needed and something that we didn't have. So until Congress gets down to the nuts and bolts and comes up with a better plan, we need to maintain at least what we've got on the books now.
They don't have a plan.
Well, that's the problem. The Congress doesn't have a plan.
They don't have a plan.
They spend more time arguing with each other and worrying about things in the past and can't go forward, that it creates problems for everyone in the country. I mean, look how long people went without the SNAP program, and still I don't even think it's not even completely been reinstated at this point.
No, it has not.
So, you know, you've got people out there that are in desperate need.
It may
need.
Not ever be.
Well, no, it may not, and it may not ever look like it looks now. And I just saw the other day on the news where they were starting to now dismantle the Department of Education, which makes absolutely no sense. They say, well, they're going to return it back to the states. Well, the states already have control of the education process. The only thing the federal government does with the Department of Education is divvy out the money back to the states to do their own program.
Right, right.
But without that Department of Education there, that was, by the way, established by Lyndon Johnson, there's no one there to direct the money to where it needs to go. Mm-hmm. And if you cut the states off entirely from federal aid, I don't know what's going to happen with the educational programs in the states. And it's not just Ohio, it's all 50 states.
Right.
So, you know, we got to be looking at these things. Our representative in Congress have got to get a grip and start thinking about everyone else, the general public, and stop worrying about running for re-election the next time and holding on to their jobs. So anyway, that's our soapbox for today. But absolutely, you're absolutely right in saying you gotta put the past in the past,
right,
and look forward to the future and keep the faith, because if you don't have faith, you don't have anything.
That's true.
You really don't.
And not only that, we think the homeless situation is bad now.
Oh, it's going to get a lot worse.
It will get a lot worse if these people can't even get food stamps, can't afford rent.
Well, you look at the average cost of rent in Columbus now is several thousand dollars a month. And that's not for a high-end apartment, you know, downtown in some of those fancy lofts. Those are $10,000 a month. This is for an ordinary home. It's ridiculous what rent has gone to.
Yes.
That's why we're seeing people from Franklin County and Delaware County migrating into Marion County, because they're looking for cheaper places to live. The problem is the influx of all those people and the greed that exists in today's rental population. Mm-hmm. these prices are here are going to go up too. Yeah. They're going to go up, yeah, and well, it just continues to migrate from one area to the other. So I don't know whether it, you know, in New York City they have rent control programs. Maybe that's something that, that the whole country needs to be looking at is rent control.
Yeah, because I think it's like $1,200 here in Marion.
Oh, at least, if not more. Some, and that and $1,200 isn't going to get you a lot.
No, not just an apartment.
And then if you're you end up paying utilities on top of that. Water is going up all the time. Sewer prices are going all up the time. Gas and electricity are going up all the time. So just to operate an apartment, unless you're one of those lucky people that get all the utilities included, but then if it is, you're going to pay more money for that too.
Yes.
But it's very expensive to live these days.
It really is.
You know,
it really is.
Probably the worst time in American history. And we're about ready to celebrate 250 years as a democracy. And the way things are looking right now, we're on some shaky ground. You know what I mean? I hope with this celebration that's going to start, and I'm going to talk about the celebration, America 250, here in just a little bit.
Right.
But with the way things are leaning right now, things aren't looking too good. They really aren't. So we the people,
was
written in the Constitution,
yes.
Need to start exercising a little more pressure and control on our representatives in Congress.
So true. And I think a lot of people are doing that, whether they are listening or implementing those things. We don't know that.
But if we bombard them with letters and telephone calls to their offices, somebody's got to take that all down. And eventually it's going to get to that representative. And if it doesn't, then we need to get to that representative in the ballot box and change things out. And this goes back to what I've said all along. We've got them in Ohio. We need term limits on these representatives. We need term limits. We need term limits on the Supreme Court. Because when you've got people sitting on that Supreme Court that have been on there 30 and 40 years, they've lost direction. And it's become too political on the Supreme Court for my way of thinking. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if we would put term limits on those people, you know, 2 6-year terms or something like that, and then get them off and bring fresh blood in, mm-hmm, at least that would give us an opportunity to rotate those people in and out. And maybe they'll start thinking more about the people than all the perks they can get by being a Supreme Court member, because that's a big scandal going on right now as well. So anyway, on a brighter note, wanted to ask you how you enjoyed the dinner with the president. This was your first time, correct?
This was my first time, and I loved it. And we sat at the table with, who was that?
General Grant, wasn't it?
Yeah, it could have been.
No, I thought
General
it was.
Grant.
I think I came over to your table. Yeah. I believe that's who you were with.
And he had a cigar on
the
table.
Yes, that's General
Grant.
That was
him.
Yes,
okay,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
It was neat. It was so different. I was so excited about going and experiencing this, you know, and watching them in their garb when they were growing, you know, in that term. I enjoyed what everyone had to say, especially Mrs. Roosevelt.
Oh, yes.
That woman did so many things.
Yes,
oh, my gosh.
Did. And she did that clear up until the end of her life, not just she was President Roosevelt's right hand. You know, she continued to do that throughout the rest of her life. She was appointed to the General Assembly, what is it called in New York? I can't remember the name for it. But, yeah, she became so active even after his death and when she left the White House. But, and how about that lady that portrayed her?
I know.
Didn't she do a wonderful
job?
She
looked like her.
She even looked like her, yeah. That's one thing I've tried to do over the years, and that was our 15th annual, is try to find local people that had some resemblance, you know, to the president or the first lady that they're portraying, and we've been so lucky to find those people. Now this particular lady is from Fremont.
Okay.
We have a few people that come from out of town that are friends, mm-hmm, that do these things for us, and she actually lives in Fremont, which is a pretty good haul from here, about an hour and a half to get to her home. But she has been friends with Val Mettler, who portrayed John Quincy Adams' wife this year, also did a great job. And so that's how we were able to get her involved in our program. And then the gentleman that played Benjamin Harrison, an Ohio native, he's a retired art teacher from Shelby, Ohio, mm-hmm, which is over in Richland County, a personal friend of mine, and has actually been doing it since we started 15 years ago. And then the gentleman that portrays Martin Van Buren, who will be a speaker next year, comes from Pemberville, which is up in Lucas County, just right outside of the Lucas County line. So those are our three out-of-towners, but everybody else is from Marion County. So we're pretty fortunate. What did you think of the dinner? Did you like the way that was
it was good.
Was put together?
It was good.
We try to keep as close as we can with the White House cookbooks. Obviously, based on what era we're in, mm-hmm. sometimes it's hard to find the things that those earlier presidents ate.
Right.
So the caterer has to do the best that they can to come close to what
they did a pretty good job.
So I think they did a really good job.
They really did.
This is our third year out at All Occasions, and very well pleased with them. We've been lucky over the years. We had the same caterer for 12 years.
Okay.
With the exception of our very first year. And she did an excellent job. She did really probably the best of anybody coming close to the recipes the way they were in the White House cookbooks. But she wanted to retire. Can't blame her. And sold the business. And that's how we ended up down at All Occasions. But they've done a wonderful job. They got a great facility there.
Yes, they do.
Plenty of room.
Yes.
How did you like the way we brought the individual presidents in the room?
That was nice, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It distinguished them from the rest of
from the
guests.
Rest of the, you're right, from the rest
yeah,
of the group.
Yeah, I appreciated that very much.
Well, I hope, and I just want to mention a couple things additionally about dinner before we move on. I hope that it continues to be able to be continued.
Right.
Our crowd was down a little bit this year.
Okay.
And I think a couple of things have happened in the last few years. COVID put a big damper on a lot of things.
Okay.
We used to get a lot of bus groups that would come in from Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Kentucky, Indiana, Michigan. But when COVID hit, a lot of the smaller bus companies that were doing trips like that through the Convention and Visitors Bureau, they went out of business.
Yeah.
Because when COVID hit, they couldn't run those trips anymore. And those were livelihoods for a lot of those small business, small bus companies. So we lost a lot of those small business, small bus businesses.
A lot of things changed because
they did.
Of COVID.
They really did. We were fortunate that this year, we did have a bus from Seneca County that came down, and that was a senior center that came down, and that was well received. I think they brought down 45 people, which helped. And looking forward to next year, we've already got a semi-commitment for two buses from that same area that would be around 100 people. So that right there is a nice boost for us. So this year we were right around 275, and I like to get it somewhere between 250 and 275. So we're about 100 people short. But we still ended up with, let's say, about 175 people, and I think the people that were there really enjoyed the event. I would encourage anyone that's never been to one to think about it, should go. This was Linda and her husband's first time, and I know she enjoyed herself.
Yes, I
already guess. Basically said that. And so think about it. Mark it down now. It's always the first Saturday in November. So the first Saturday in November 2026, I haven't actually looked at the date yet, but that will be the date that we have it on, that first Saturday. And we do that because that's the weekend before the general election.
Okay.
And I've always done that from the beginning, because if the gentlemen that are portraying presidents want to take that as a time to campaign for their reelection, because each president is in his own time.
Right.
General Grant was in the 1880s that you sat with, but then John Quincy Adams' wife, who was there for him, that was in the 1815, 1816 area. So, you know, there's 150 years difference in time frame. So, you know, they choose the day, the year and the month that they want to be in when they come to the dinner. So they'll concentrate on that if they're speaking or if they're doing dinner conversation. But I'm so proud of the individuals that portray these characters for us. They spend a tremendous amount of time learning about these people. They really do.
Absolutely.
Because when you're doing dinner conversation at a table with total strangers, that are interested in history mm-hmm. or may have no knowledge whatsoever about that particular president or first lady, they're going to ask questions.
Right.
And you better be prepared with an answer. So a lot of them that have been doing the same character for the last 15 years are really well adapted to that character, and they know their lives inside and out.
Wow.
But that requires a lot of research and a lot of time spent. And then we have some people that I ask, you know, like from one year to the next to do another character.
Right.
Like Val Mettler, who has portrayed several first ladies for me. I'll tell her by February who I want her to portray for me in November, and she gets to work and she studies that character
wow.
for the next 8 to 10 months, so she's prepared then
right.
to do her job.
Whoa.
So really proud of the
I was so
event.
Impressed and, by everything. I really was. My husband enjoyed it too.
And I thank you for that. And again, I just encourage everyone to think about that for next year. I do want to take a couple of minutes to thank some people that were tremendously involved in the program. First of all, our sponsors. We had really good sponsors this year, and good sponsors make the difference between showing a profit and not showing a profit. And as we all know, costs have gone up. So costs for the facility where we are and buying the dinners that we
right.
resell to the participants, that has gone up and will be going up again next year.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So, you know, we're talking $25 to $30. Our cost for one of those dinners. So when we're asking $38 or $42 for a dinner, our profit margin is very narrow. So by getting these sponsors, that helps defray some of our cost and allows us to make a little more money. And that money, of course, goes back into the general operation of the Marion County Historical Society because we are a 501c3 nonprofit.
Right.
So we don't get any federal funding. We don't get any state funding. Fortunately, over the last several years, I've been able to get some funding from our county commissioners, and that helps us tremendously. And I'm still lobbying for that again this year. So, but that's the only outside funding we get. Our income comes from events like the Dinner with the Presidents or the one we do in March, the United Heritage Hall, which mm-hmm. I know you and Ed have been to,
right.
which is also a great event, and other events that we do throughout the summer. And the people that come through the door when we are open for tours, you know, during the summer months when the General Museum is open. And memberships. It's very important
yes.
for memberships.
Yes.
Memberships are very inexpensive with the Marion County Historical Society, but it means a lot to us. You can buy a single membership for $35. You can buy a family membership for $50, and it doesn't matter how many people in your family. You can have six kids and a mom and dad, and it's still only
$50. Can't beat
that price. No, you can't. And that allows you to come to the museum anytime you want.
Right.
You know, if you've got out-of-town guests, you can bring your guests. They'll have to pay admission, but you get in free. So
mm-hmm.
it makes a great place to take people that have never been there before. And that also gives you heads up on what events are coming up. There's a newsletter that we put out, and so you can follow that electronically. So there's a lot of benefits to that, besides being able to help us continue with our mission of collecting, preserving, and sharing Marion County history, because if we didn't keep all that material and make it available both in person at the museum and also online at our website and available to you to do research with, you'd have no idea what the history of Marion County was.
That's true.
And
so true.
We have over 30,000 items in our archives that have been donated to us over the years of Marion's history.
Right.
And we continue to get more things in daily. So important, really important. But this year's our collecting sponsors was the highest level. We're the Pillar Credit Union, which is a local credit union here in Marion, and Ohio Health, which is, of course, a big benefactor. Excuse me. Plays a very important part in Marion County right now. Our preserving sponsors, pardon me, the Y Men's Service Club, Ron and Leslie Schieffer, Willis and Gwendolyn Thomas. And then our sharing sponsors, the Marion Public Library, Carol's Jewelers, Diane and Richard Mott, who have bookkeeping and income tax service here in town, mm-hmm. John and Lori Shore, Paul and Ellen Messenger, and my wife and I. Okay. So those are the people that sponsored this year, and we're always looking for sponsors. So next year, keep that in mind if you're okay. in business or an individual out there.
Right.
For more information, you can always go to marianhistory.com, find out what's going on with our events coming up in the future, and learn more about what we do with the Marion County Historical Society. And if you want more information on the presidents, there's a great website called, and these are all small case letters, called millercenter.org/president. millercenter.org/president. And there's a lot of basic information about all of the presidents of the United States that we've had thus far, and the first ladies as well. So a lot of great places to find out some information about that. So did want to mention that this is the last weekend coming up for the museum to have hours.
Okay.
So this Saturday and Sunday, we will be open from 1 to 4, and then we will close for the season. And we will reopen then the last Saturday of March for the Night at Heritage Hall, which
right.
is the event that we do that's similar to the museum, Night at the Museum movie that was out a number of years
right,
ago.
Right.
So, and that'll give you a sneak peek at the exhibit, the new exhibit, which I don't know what the girls have planned yet for next year, but it
right.
will be a completely new exhibit. This year it was the 175th anniversary of the Marion County Fair, but next year it'll be something entirely different.
Yeah,
tied
big celebration.
Tied to 250, yes. It'll be tied to Marion 250, and we're going to talk about what's going on in Marion County here in a few minutes about Marion, about America 250. But so go to the website, check out things that are upcoming, and also wanted to mention that when we are closed, December, January, February, and March, you can still come to the museum because you can buy books anytime and things out of our gift shop. And all you need to do is come during regular business hours mm-hmm. when we're closed, and that's from like 9 to 4. Come to the State Street side, go up the steps, ring the bell,
right.
and someone will come and let you in. And we are now going to, as I said at the board meeting the other night, which Linda's a board member, we're going to be making some big changes in the museum over the winter when we're closed. We're going to be moving the telephone museum from the west side of the building to the east side of the building where the current gift shop and Woodland Elves exhibits are, and we're just going to switch those.
Right, right.
So the bookstore/gift shop will be located on the west side of the building where that State Street entrance is.
Right.
So if you want to buy a book at Christmas for, you know, some relatives coming in, or, you know, just as a present for somebody in your family, you can come down anytime, and from now until Christmas, just ring that State Street door bell, and mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. can buy a book. And we've got a tremendous selection of books that were written by Marion authors here in town.
Right.
So, you know, 25 to 30 different books. A lot of information on Marion cemeteries. There's a lot of people that are interested in that. Everything about Marion's past. Randy Winland has written, I think, 7 books now. He has a couple of postcard books out. 2 books on the Sawyer Sanatorium. One was
okay.
just released. I think, were you at the dedication for the...
No, but I've been out there to read it.
To see the sign, yeah. Just dedicated...
Didn't make that one, yeah.
Just dedicated a new Ohio historical marker.
It's nice. I didn't even know about that history out there.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It is.
And unfortunately, everything's gone with the exception of a couple of arches out there.
Yeah.
Anything's left, but... yeah, so there's a lot of books that you can buy, and they make great gifts. And then we are going to... take the Woodland Elves exhibit, and we're going to disperse it all over the museum, both floors.
Okay.
And then when children come in, they will be given a scavenger hunt sheet.
Oh, my.
And so while their parents are visiting the museum mm-hmm. and reading all the things about history, if the kids are a little bit too young to be wanting to pay that much attention to
mm-hmm.
that, they've got a scavenger hunt to do.
That is nice.
And they'll be able to find these Woodland Elves located throughout that place.
That's
so
great.
I don't know what the girls have got planned if they fill out the sheet entirely, but I'm sure they'll get get a little something, a star or a little trinket or something out of that for doing that.
That's
so
nice.
I think it's going to be a big improvement in the museum. I can't say enough about our staff. When people from out of town and out of state come to visit the museum, especially, you know, we get people to come to see the Popcorn Museum, and then they're so surprised to see what else is there besides that. They're thinking they're just getting one museum. They're getting five in one. I think with the staff, a paid staff of 2.5 employees and the rest being volunteers, I think they do a fantastic job with what they do in there.
Oh, yeah.
It absolutely amazes me. And this winter, in about the end of January, I want you to come up and see what the museum looks like up in the atrium, because you'll look at that and you'll think, oh, my word. What a mess. This will never be ready by March.
I believe it.
But it always is.
So
many
little pieces.
Yeah, I always want directors to come up, the board members to come up and look at the museum when it's downtime.
In disarray, right?
And in disarray and see what we do when it's closed.
Wow.
Because it takes a tremendous amount of work to completely change out a whole exhibit.
I bet.
And put out a new one. But that's what keeps the museum fresh, and that's what keeps people coming back. That's why I always ask people, when were you at the – have you been to the museum? Oh, yeah, I was there 4 years ago. But if you haven't been lately, it's entirely different. Mm. And I can ask that question every year, and it's going to be different every year.
Wow. So. That's nice, though.
So, yeah, it keeps it fresh. People wanting to come back.
Yeah.
And this is what really makes my job fun. I do tours too at the museum. I try, and anybody out there that is a member, you know, you can volunteer to do a tour. We need volunteers all the time for tours. Fun to do. You're only giving up 3 hours a day, and you can do 1 day a week or 2 days a month or whatever you want to do. We could use that. But this summer in particular, we get a lot of people from out of state. You look down through our register. We have people register when they come in and get their ticket. And you look down through that register, and we get visitors from all 50 states.
Wow.
And foreign countries. Mm. It's amazing. The big draw, again, is the Why Not Popcorn Museum.
Right.
But that gets them in the front door. And then we get them involved in Marion History and Mary Ellen Withrow and Warren Harding, you know, and Isley's and all the things that happened in Marion that people don't know about. The shovel, you know, and the connection to the Panama Canal, all that kind of stuff. Had a group come in, or two, a husband and wife come in this summer. They had just been down to Dayton to the Air Force Museum. Mm-hmm. And they were from Indianapolis, Indiana. And they had just retired, and they were out sightseeing in the tri-state area. And they were on their way home and saw the Popcorn Museum listed. And thought, oh, we'll drive up there to see what that's all about. Got there at 1 o'clock when we opened, and they stayed the entire 3 hours. Mm. And I'm always promoting the dinner with the president, so when they were leaving, I was telling them about the dinner, and I gave them a sheet of the dinner, who was going to be there and all that. And the man said, oh, we're going to come back to that. And, of course, I'm thinking, yeah, right, I've heard this before, right, you know. After the dinner was over a couple Saturdays ago, guy comes up to me, says, you remember me?
You look familiar.
Indianapolis? Oh, my word.
Wow.
You came. He said, I told you we were going to come back. And they kept their word. Kept their word, so they were there. So that's what makes me feel good, going up there and doing, acting as a tour guide or as a docent, because of the people that you get to meet.
Mm-hmm.
I know just this summer alone, I had people from Wisconsin, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Michigan, a lot of people from Michigan, Illinois, Indiana, Florida. Plus, I had people from Maryland. There were some people there from Germany. There was a couple there from Scotland.
Mm.
It's amazing.
Wow.
The people that come.
That was a lot.
And again, I have to admit, you know, a lot of them are interested in popcorn.
Right, right.
And so the Wyandotte Popcorn Museum is a huge draw for us. And the marriage of the Wyandotte Popcorn Museum and the Marion County Historical Society was probably one of the best marriages of two museums ever.
I'm sure.
Because when we obtained the old post office building in 1989, at that time, that's when the arrangement was made, because we had that huge room in the back that was added in the 30s. Mm-hmm. And at that time, George Brown came to the board and said, "Hey, I've been looking for a place to put my collection." It had been all over the place. I think the last place it was out at the mall when the mall was still going. And he said, "You know, let's work something out." So we did. We rent them space for their museum, and then we act as a caretaker for it. They have their own board, but it provides an additional income for us, monthly or rental income for us,
right,
which helps us tremendously. But it also helps them because it provides them for a place to house that collection.
Right.
And that is the single largest collection of popcorn-related memorabilia in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what brings people from all over the world. I've had, over the years, I've had people from Japan, from South Korea. A lot of the Asian countries are very interested in the manufacture of popcorn. And I think a lot of them still grow popcorn in some of those countries.
Okay.
So,
all
yeah.
Right.
So, but anyway, I could go on and on and on, and I've just about blown the entire first segment here.
Still got 9 minutes to go.
Well, I don't want to get started in America 250 and have to stop. So I think I've got something I wanted to share with our audience today. And I'm a member of the Smithsonian Institute, and the Smithsonian puts out a wonderful magazine once a month, and I always find great things, and I've shared these things with you a lot of times,
definitely.
Especially the black history of the country. But I found this article, this just came in the most recent Smithsonian. And oh, by the way, you can belong to the Smithsonian for like $30 a year and get this wonderful magazine. It's well worth the fee for what you get from it.
Okay.
And also they have a wonderful store too. The Smithsonian has a store, but I thought this was appropriate for this time of the year. We all like cider.
Yes.
I like to make cider. I grew up on a farm and we made cider.
Okay.
In the fall. We had a few apple trees and had an old hand press that we use. But when I lived up in Wyandotte County in Sycamore, I had an apple tree in my backyard, so I always collected all the apples and took them over to Tiffin and had them pressed and had cider made. Usually got 10 to 15 gallon of cider made out
of it. That's not bad. That's quite a bit.
So I thought this was an interesting article because it was about our first president and his interest in cider making.
Mm.
During the 1760s, George Washington wrote to the Laird family in New Jersey, pleading for the recipe for a bewitching cider, spelled C-Y-D-E-R. That's the way they spelled it in the day. So he was asking for their recipe for this bewitching cider spirit that the Lairds brewed. And Abraham Lincoln later sold the same drink during his stint as a tavern keeper in Springfield, Illinois. Now, we can't be sure whether Abe was actually serving the Laird recipe, but he served something very closely resembling that. When William Laird emigrated from Scotland's Fife County in 1698 and began distilling his cider called Applejack in the colonies. The Lairds launched their Applejack operation in 1780 as Laird & Company. The same year, they received the first ever distillery license from the U.S. government. To make Applejack, a type of apple brandy, you have to master the art of jacking. That's freezing fermented hard cider and removing the ice chunks that form. Since alcohol freezes at a much lower temperature than water, the water then in the cider freezes first, while the alcohol remains liquid, effectively concentrating the boozy portion. Colonial settlers would leave barrels of cider outside during the brutal New England winters, chipping away the frozen water to create a potent spirit that could reach from 25 to 40% alcohol. The more ice they removed, the stronger the drink became. Jacking required no special equipment, making Applejack far easier to produce than grain whiskeys that demanded elaborate stills and careful temperature control. Like many American distilleries, Laird & Company shuttered its Applejack operations when Prohibition arrived in 1920. But months before the 21st Amendment repealed Prohibition in December of 1933, Laird & Company received a federal license to produce alcohol for medicinal purposes only, which let it reopen before many of its competitors. Today, Laird and other modern commercial producers have largely replaced traditional jacking with steam distillation, using steam to vaporize the alcohol before condensing it back into liquid form, which enables a year-round production, not just based on the winter and the freezing. Laird & Company's bottles of Applejack are still found in many liquor stores, in classic cocktails such as Jack Rose, and in newer concoctions like the American Trilogy. It drinks like a full-bodied whiskey, but with bright, crisp, and slightly sour notes that are distinctively apple-y. It's enough to tantalize anyone on first sip, even if you were a founding father.
I'm sure.
Now, I like apple cider, and I have to admit...
I mean, I like it, too.
I have to admit that when I was much younger, we did experiment around with trying to make hard cider.
Okay.
Not this particular process, okay. But, you know, as kids go, you've always got to fool around with those things when you're growing up. And I was telling somebody the other day about this. I said, yeah, you know, growing up on a farm, we tried to make turn our cider into hard cider. Of course, in those days, we just set it back in a dark place for a while and let it turn hard.
Right.
But it was also like sneaking behind the corn crib and trying to smoke corn silk, you know, when you were a kid.
Really? Corn silk?
Yeah, corn silk. A bit of the...
Like a cigarette?
Yeah. You'd spread the corn silk out, let it dry, and then roll it like into tobacco and put it in a paper, like, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, make cigarettes out of it.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure anybody
heard that.
I'm sure of anybody that grew up on a farm did that. Yeah.
They probably did.
Yeah.
I just never heard.
Made you sicker than a dog, but you
I
know
bet it
you
did.
Had to try it at least once, you know. Kind of like what was Mark Twain's character that was always getting
Tom
into
Sawyer.
Tom Sawyer. Yeah, he smoked corn silk. Yeah. Yeah,
I did not remember that. Yeah. I think I read the book in school, and they used to have a movie out, Tom Sawyer.
Oh yeah, there was one made clear. But I think there was one made originally back in the 40s.
Yeah,
that was popular when I was a kid growing up. But I thought that story was quite interesting about the Applejack, and I actually have seen Applejack sold in the stores. I think Meyer might carry it like this time of year, you know.
Okay.
You can buy it when they're making it like that. But of course, they can sell it year round there, but like that. But not being much of a drinker, it doesn't much interest me anymore. But, you know, as a kid growing up, you try that stuff. You know.
Of course.
Farm boys. Yeah.
I think children are inquisitive anyway.
Oh, sure.
Know.
Yeah.
And if you tell them it's bad, they don't believe you. They got to try it anyway.
You
got to
try it. You got to try it. But then, you know, then there's always a price to pay.
Yes,
for those,
absolutely.
Those kind of things, you know. Every time I do a tour out at Lynn School in the summertime, and we have the third graders come in, you know, in the spring before school is out. And one of the things that always gets the kids is when I tell them about the woodshed that we have out behind the school. Mm-hmm. And of course, they want to know, well, what's a woodshed for? And I said, well, it has a double meaning. I said, we have a potbelly stove here that burns wood and coal, and so we use the woodshed to keep our wood dry.
Mm-hmm.
But we also use the woodshed for a trip to the woodshed if you've been bad. What do you mean if you've been bad? I said, well, you know, the teacher always kept a hickory switch behind his desk that if you were bad and didn't control yourself, you could make a trip to the woodshed and you got a whipping. Oh, you can't whip people. Well, they did back in those days, and even when I grows up in school, I had a few whippings in school, believe me.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I had a spanking in the second grade. So, you know, that's what has happened to school.
Yes, absolutely.
They want to know, well, they can't control the kids,
that's
right?
That's right. And my wife, being a retired school teacher, went through that. You know, you have to be careful. She had to be careful what she said to the kids, you know?
Do.
But you know, I think that's some of the things that have ruined the disciplinary measures in schools now, because the teachers have no discipline. So are we about ready to hit the break time?
Hello, caller.
Yeah, Linda.
Hi.
Where's Fred?
He's right here.
I'm here.
Fred?
Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, how about the corn cob pipe go along with that?
Well, yes, you're absolutely right. Corn cob pipes, for sure.
That was pretty neat, hauling that out and putting a little stem there. I forget what the little stem we drilled through it, but that was the first try.
Yep.
A lot of guys kept smoking pipes today that I know that said that they smoked. Remember, the first pipe was the corn cob pipe. You guys have a good day. Thank you.
You too. Thank you.
Yep, forgot about corn cob pipes. Yeah.
All right. We are out of time, and thank you for listening to A Voice of the People live here with Linda Sims on WGH Talk. Come back and be with us from 11:15 to the top of the hour, 12 noon. Fred Malone will be my guest for the next hour as well. Thank you.
You're listening to The Talking Place. The legendary star of The Facts of Life, Charlotte Ray, Mrs. Garrett.
Yeah.